This is Collaborate, a Net Zero podcast brought to you by the ECITB. In this series, we will talk to experts at the forefront of the energy transition. We will cover a wide range of topics, from technologies that are key to unlocking industrial decarbonisation, to regulation and policy development, and perhaps most important of all, the skills needed to help industry deliver net zero. Thanks for listening.
Hello, welcome to Collaborate, Transitioning to Net Zero. I'm Carol Sinclair, Net Zero Project Manager at the ECITB. In this, our third podcast, our focus is on hydrogen and the energy transition. So hydrogen's considered one of the low carbon energy solutions and an essential element to help meet the energy transition to net zero. We discussed in our first podcast that production of low carbon hydrogen offers an attractive decarbonisation option across many sectors, and especially those that are harder to electrify. So it's important to understand that case for the hydrogen economy, including technology, social acceptance and investment needs to support delivery of the UK's hydrogen ambitions. What actions government and industry can take to facilitate its deployment, and also how do we prepare the workforce? So today, I'm really pleased to be joined by Debnath Pal of Stopford and Cara McWhirr of Exodus to discuss hydrogen and the energy transition, providing that engineering construction industry context and consider the impact for employers and workers. Deb is Stopford's Director of Consultancy Services and brings more than 30 years of consulting experience in chemicals, oil and gas, fuel storage and renewable energy sectors. So Cara McWhirr leads the Exodus Hydrogen Excellence Hub and has over 20 years of experience in the energy sector. Cara is Head of Hydrogen Strategy for Exodus globally, and this role involves leading a small team of hydrogen experts, commercial engineering and market insights, monitoring policy and marketing. So fantastic wealth of expertise on hydrogen on board for today. So Cara, Deb, welcome.
Thank you.
So hydrogen, it's not new in the UK, but we're aware of pockets of, you know, hydrogen industry activity across the country that are long established. But we're increasingly hearing about the expanding hydrogen economy and its role in delivering a sustainable future. So where does hydrogen for energy transition make sense and why? Deb, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure, Carol. As you mentioned, hydrogen is not new to UK industry. It's been used for decades in the oil and gas sectors, the pharmaceutical sectors, and in the manufacture of fertilisers. So it's not new. The main difference and why we think it's going to form a big part of net zero, achieving those targets by 2050, is that instead of hydrogen just being used as a process gas used for chemical reactions, it's now going to be used as an energy source to help decarbonize industries across many sectors. Mm. So that's one of the main reasons why there's going to be a huge expansion in the use of hydrogen. And as far as emissions are concerned compared to natural gas, obviously when you combust hydrogen, you do not get any harmful greenhouse gas emissions. You just get water vapor. So those are sort of a couple of pointers of why the growth of hydrogen is important for us to meet the objective of net zero by 2050. Mm-hmm. The demand varies across the world. The UK government, so a couple of months ago, the UK hydrogen champion, Jane Toogood, published a report on the status of the various metrics for the hydrogen economy. And the UK government predicts that by 2050, almost up to a third of all energy demand in the UK will be satisfied or be gained from hydrogen. At the moment, it's less than 1%. So as you can see, from less than 1% up to a third of all UK energy use will be supplied by hydrogen. That's a huge expansion in the manufacture and use of hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So as Carol mentioned in her introduction, hydrogen is not the silver bullet. There's lots of situations, lots of industrial applications where electrification makes more sense. However, the sectors of industry, especially the high temperature process sectors, such as the manufacture of cement, of steel, where electrification is not possible, the technology to electrify those processes is at a very low technology readiness level. So in those sort of what's called hard to abate sectors, the only option is to use hydrogen. The demand for hydrogen predominantly in the future will all be green hydrogen. And when we talk about green hydrogen, that is hydrogen produced using renewable power, either from solar or wind. That powers an electrolyzer, which then splits water into hydrogen. So that is green hydrogen. Most of the projects that's been sanctioned recently in the next few years will actually be for blue hydrogen, which uses natural gas. The steam reforming process, CO2 is formed. However, this carbon dioxide is captured and is not emitted. So it's not called green hydrogen, it's called blue hydrogen, but it's also termed low carbon hydrogen. So as far as the development of the hydrogen economy in the next few years are concerned, long term, a lot of the developments will be on generating green hydrogen. But in the short term, a lot of focus, especially in the UK and in America, is on the generation of blue hydrogen, which uses natural gas but captures the CO2 from the process. So the other important aspect of hydrogen and why the energy transition makes sense is its impact on energy security for countries around the world. So energy security over the past, especially over the past 2 years, has become the focal point of many governments due to the war in Ukraine. Green hydrogen provides an opportunity for countries to increase their energy independence. They can use their own solar, they can use their own wind power to generate green hydrogen and use that as an energy source. That isn't strictly true with blue hydrogen. Blue hydrogen still uses methane. It's still linked to the fossil fuel market. So it doesn't really provide you energy independence compared to green hydrogen.
We can see a potential beyond the UK demand as well. So while the UK has laid out some targets for hydrogen production, really from 2030 onwards, increasing up to about a third of our energy supply, as Dev said, the EU has gone, particularly as a response to the Ukraine-Russia war, has gone more strongly towards hydrogen as part of its Repower EU plans. And by 2030, the EU is looking to import about half of its hydrogen needs from outside of the EU, which would include the UK. And that demands about somewhere between 5 and 10 times what the UK is planning for its own production needs. So there's also an export opportunity that's coming up quite quickly for our kind of near neighbours in the EU. And our position in having both gas resource to produce blue hydrogen and storage resource for carbon that's captured from that process, and in having large amounts of offshore wind, which is starting to develop, kind of puts the UK in a good place to build a sort of big new energy industry targeting that export market as well.
Yeah, so as Cara mentioned, I think there is a huge opportunity for the UK to export technology and the expertise. A big part of the hydrogen economy is that the huge scale-up required from the current low levels of hydrogen production. So it is carrying out carbon capture at scale, which is quite limited at the moment. And it's also upscaling how you generate green hydrogen as well, and the changes required to the grid system. So in this country, it has been quite successful in generating renewable power. A lot of that is from wind. And it has been a great success story of the UK. However, a lot of the R&D and the manufacturing processes in the wind industry are based overseas. So I think a lot of the focus and a lot of the government's incentives is to make sure that doesn't happen with the hydrogen economy, that actually we are involved, that the UK is at the forefront of innovation, of manufacture and supply. So as Cara said, there is a huge export potential that the UK can capitalise on.
Fabulous. And as you're saying, even to meet the ambitions for UK in terms of hydrogen production, that's a huge scale up. So to be going beyond that and into the export market is going to require a massive scale of investment to get us to those targets within 2045 Scotland, 2050 UK. So where are the main active and planned UK hydrogen projects just now? You know, what's happening across the various regions at the moment? And what does that roadmap look like to accelerate that scale up of the hydrogen economy? Cara?
The largest areas of activity at the moment are around the two carbon capture clusters that have been announced and are being kind of fast-tracked and supported by government. So HyNet in the northwest of England and the East Coast Cluster on the east side of England. Those are industrial clusters where there is a kind of a helpful combination in terms of location of demand for carbon to be captured, so from industrial sources, but also demand for hydrogen to be used. So that by having those things close together, you kind of eliminate any issues with transport of either CO2 or hydrogen for long distances around the place. That model of those clusters, which will in both involve CO2 offshore, CO2 stores, is effectively blue hydrogen is a key part of those clusters, because that gives a steady customer to those CO2 stores as well as the industrial sources. And we're also producing this hydrogen that can be used in those industrial processes locally as well. So it's a nice kind of neat combination. Yeah. Because those are kind of relatively large scale industrial big companies involved as well, that's in some ways an easier thing to get going. Blue hydrogen, as Deb said, is more advanced in terms of the technology and the size and scale. So we can get relatively large projects going quite quickly through that mechanism, but they are very specific geographies. Mm-hmm. We've also seen, as part of the kind of longer roadmap for development of hydrogen, there are quite a number of policy and sort of regulatory type things starting to stack up in place, and there's a roadmap out for those. So we've seen things like a low carbon hydrogen standard be published by the UK, which basically says these are the conditions that must be met for you to be able to claim that your hydrogen is indeed low carbon. So it really is achieving a certain standard of emissions, and then that qualifies you for support. We've seen the first round of the Net Zero Hydrogen Fund, which is effectively like a contract for difference type round, similar to what's been used in renewables. The first kind of shortlist for that has been announced, and that's expecting to announce about 250 megawatts worth of project. So just to put that into context, that first round is looking to achieve something like 1.5 terawatt hours. Annually of hydrogen production, and that compares with something like 30 terawatt hours, which is our target for 2030. So you get a bit of an idea for we're starting to get there, but there's still quite a way to go beyond that to get to that 2030 type target. And those initial projects include green hydrogen projects. It's an electrolytic round, so they're all green hydrogen projects. And they are throughout the UK, so we've got a number of projects in Scotland and different locations in England and in Wales as well. So you're starting to see those sort of smaller electrolytic powered from renewables type projects starting to develop, and that will just continue to scale up as more rounds come out.
Yeah. So, as Cara said, there's governments approved two of the clusters. Obviously, the ambition of the government is to provide funding for other industrial clusters. So there's a cluster in South Wales, the West Midlands, the Humber, as well as Scotland as well. So hopefully this first round of funding is just the start for two of the clusters, and that will expand. I think the time table is that definitely by 2030, the first two clusters, HyNet and the East Coast, will become operational. So 2030, hopefully those plants will be up and running, capturing carbon and generating blue hydrogen. The other advantage, I think, of tackling it from the perspective of the clusters is obviously in these large industrial zones within the UK, there is a already a skilled workforce in those areas. A lot of these projects are an existing operational plant, so there's obviously an expansion of resource required, and there may be some transfer of skills required as well. But I think it just makes the transition a bit easier as well. There's recently been new funding to look at degeneration and the use of low carbon hydrogen outside the industrial clusters as well. So this is crucial if they are to be viable businesses going forward, i.e. how are they going to decarbonize their processes in the next 5 to 10 years. However, outside the clusters, different solutions may be required. So an important aspect of decarbonizing the UK will be what happens outside the clusters, and also that plays into the skills and the resources required, which will be a challenge as well.
Yeah, and everything just needs to be brought along in parallel, doesn't it? So the clusters being heavy emitters, they are a priority. But actually, as you say, Deb, there is hydrogen related activities that's required across the country in support of a wide range of end uses. So for this sort of scaling up, what do you see as the main challenges for the realisation of these hydrogen projects?
Yes, over the past few years, the government has invested quite heavily in undertaking and facilitating trials in the hard to abate sectors, such as the cement industry and the mineral sector, to see if hydrogen can be used instead of fossil fuels in their processes. And this has been a very successful program. Hydrogen can be used in these hard to abate sectors. The main barrier for its continued use of hydrogen in these sectors is the cost. Hydrogen is just too expensive. At the moment, there's also a supply issue with green and blue hydrogen. So the commercial aspects of making hydrogen competitive is a challenge in the short term. Across the world, there's different tax being taken on by governments. Last year in America, they passed the IRA, which is known as the Inflation Reduction Act. And this has provided an enormous boost to the clean energy sector in the US. It has provided federal funding of about $370 billion. On top of that, it also provides a very healthy tax incentive for every litre of sustainable aviation fuel. For every kilo of clean hydrogen that's generated, you can get up to $3 per kilo as a tax incentive. So this is huge. It is a game changer. A lot of other countries are playing catch up. The Europeans are going to be setting similar incentives to IRA, though not at the same scale. And the UK needs to do something similar to ensure that the UK gets its fair share of world investment and capital, to ensure that the capital doesn't all flow to the US and Europe. So that is extremely important for the commercial incentives to be set in the UK to further develop the UK hydrogen market. Mm-hmm. So those are the commercial aspects. Earlier on, Cara also mentioned the huge infrastructure that is required in the UK to meet net zero by 2050. So in order to build the infrastructure required, there's obviously the skills and the number of skilled people that's required to ensure that the infrastructure is built effectively. But also there's a regulatory aspect to this. With these projects, there's potential bottlenecks with the planning and permitting process. So the planning and permitting process needs to be fit for purpose. It needs to be as efficient as possible so that it doesn't create additional barriers for investment into the UK, and it doesn't cause excessive delays for these large infrastructure projects that are required for us to meet net zero by 2050.
Yeah.
And I think some of those challenges are not specific to hydrogen. They're related to the fact that we're trying to transform entirely our energy systems and get our energy across the board from different places than we've been used to in the past. So that's across all energy industries, reaching into the consuming industries as well, into transport, as power generation world as well. Huge scale of change. And that in itself, hydrogen is one of the parts of that that is going to need a lot of effort, a lot of maybe not wild reskilling, but a lot of movement of people from industry to industry as older energy industries reduce in terms of what they're producing and these new energies kind of take off. There's always that the old energy trilemma problem of hitting, everyone wants cheap energy, low carbon energy and secure energy, and trying to hit all three of those has always been a challenge. And yeah, I guess hydrogen isn't any different there. It just has a slightly different place, and its challenges in some industries will be competing with other sources of energy, and right enough, those other sources might be better matches, and it will find its place. But there's going to have a constant focus on those three things, on making sure that we're getting it as cheap as we can, making sure we can provide that security of supply, and also making sure that we are indeed producing low carbon energy through kind of monitoring and regulation around that.
Yeah, no, that definitely. And as I sort of mentioned before, it's a huge impact and a huge investment required in the infrastructure that is needed for hydrogen. As Cara said, we've been used to decades and decades of using fossil fuel and the end use. Everything is designed around the fossil fuel system. So it's a huge change. I know the previous podcast that Carol conducted was on project collaboration, which was about how to get successful projects to deliver at the end. And I think that is key, because these are huge infrastructure projects across the UK. So it would require more collaboration, and not, which perhaps hasn't been visible or hasn't happened on large projects in the past. There's been a lot of projects that have overspent, that have run behind schedule. If we are to meet net zero by 2050, there's going to be a lot more of these mega projects, and they need to be delivered more successfully. So collaboration is a key aspect for that across the different stakeholders. And then from there, we sort of get on to, I suppose, it may be considered one of the biggest challenges, but it is the skills required to build the infrastructure that is required as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking at some UK government analysis, the hydrogen sector could support over 12,000 jobs, and by 2050 it could increase to 100,000 jobs. And that's just the hydrogen sector. And as Cara mentioned, we need to look at that in the broader context of the full energy sector. So there's going to be significant workforce demand. So that's going to require sort of, I suppose, transition, repositioning of existing workforce, but also a requirement for increased volume as well. So, we're seeing a significant workforce demand. So what do you think this means for engineering construction, for skills in the short, medium, long term?
Yeah, so I think in the short term, as we said, there are relatively few projects being built now, and there'll be a bit of a slow build up. We're already seeing, though, a lot of interest. For example, so I work in the oil and gas sector, or in Aberdeen, which is obviously heavily involved in oil and gas, and we see a lot of interest from people in understanding how their skills as maybe process engineers or safety engineers or subsea pipeline engineers, how those translate into a world where hydrogen becomes a reality. And we're starting to see kind of early phase type studies happening, looking at how these projects could develop. Lots of different ideas. There'll be a lot of exploration as to how do we construct these plants and what type of projects make sense in terms of where we locate the production facilities. How do we export that hydrogen to other areas? So we're certainly seeing sort of study type work in the short term and technical knowledge needing to be developed so that those studies can come up with good answers. So within Exodus, we want to make sure we can give good advice. So we need to make sure that we understand what the needs of hydrogen are. And then maybe in the medium and to long term, we will start to see these projects really begin to take off. We should see the first tranche of the project supported by the Net Zero Hydrogen Fund start to be constructed around about 2025, which isn't that long, and then that'll grow. I expect to see a more distributed energy production system than we've got at the moment, because we will have hydrogen production for on the green hydrogen side likely located close to where the renewable energy resources. So that's going to be, that could be near large onshore wind farms or offshore wind farms, or coastal areas with good access to offshore wind. Could be nuclear, could be associated with nuclear plants, but I think we will see areas which haven't had that energy production, local workforce start to be a reality, as well as Deb said, existing industrial areas being used as some of the production sites. And that comes with it, all the construction side and then the operation of these plants. There's a lot of crossover with existing either petrochemical, oil and gas, any kind of processing plant type skill set. That's what these hydrogen production plants are. They will involve a lot of pipes and pumps and compressors. There's a lot of water handling. So I think the water industry is going to be a big place to learn from and to take skills and knowledge from, because you cannot produce green hydrogen without water. That's what you're making it from. So transfer of skills from different areas for sure, but net, it's an expansion, I think, of that type of skill set from what we've got today.
Yeah, definitely. And it's across the whole supply chain. So it's from the sort of the manufacturer of electrolyzers through to storage of hydrogen as well. The UK has very low capacity to store natural gas, for example. For the hydrogen economy to grow and to be robust, the storage element needs to be resolved. There's obviously a lot of work being done on using or converting old salt caverns, using liquid organic carriers. There's also work being carried out in the North Sea on depleted oil fields as well, for areas where hydrogen could be stored as well. So it is across the supply chain from the generation of hydrogen through to its end use. So I think as far as the impact on jobs and development, I think it does start with the innovation side, the collaboration with the universities, which is already happening to a high degree. Obviously, the UK is well established as far as having world-class academic institutions. It is about the whole supply chain. The issue at the moment is estimating the demand over the next few years. We all know what the estimates are required as far as hydrogen production is concerned to in 2050 to meet net zero. But what's going to happen over the next 5 to 10 years, and the resources required in which sector is more difficult to predict.
Yeah. I think, you know, we have some skills research and activity ongoing. You know, we're seeing the IDRIC supported research, not only into all the technologies, as you mentioned, Deb, working in partnership with the universities, they're also looking at that sort of skills for industrial decarbonisation and drilling into the hydrogen economy as well. And the ECITB's forthcoming demand supply modelling for workforce based around various scenarios that will help to inform that nearer term picture, and maybe that work of the Hydrogen Skills Alliance, looking at the foresighting around the different technologies, the implications for skills, and picking up on those elements that Cara was saying about people working within other areas of energy and process industries, and what further knowledge do they need, or top up or experience or exposure do they need for working in new areas of the energy sector.
And a big part is the numbers. I think the skills required, that's quite easily mapped. It's the numbers that is the challenge. And obviously there's various initiatives, so that there's obviously the apprenticeship schemes, and I think in the short term it's making sure that these existing schemes fully utilized, and there's obviously a lot of work required to get people interested into getting into the profession, because in the short to medium term there's obviously a huge numbers gap, and it's how that is resolved will be key. So I think understanding why there isn't the required number of candidates going for apprenticeship is quite key. Obviously that goes back to schools and how the sector is being explained or portrayed. I think the advantage is that the younger generation, Gen Z, teenage son, they are very passionate about net zero. So I think that is the thing. And I think the other aspect that we need to be aware of as far as the skills and the numbers is demographics as well. Currently in engineering, in the chemical sector, the oil and gas sector, there is an aging workforce. So that also needs to be factored in when looking at what the gaps are, the numbers required.
Absolutely. And apprenticeships, absolutely fantastic as a new entrant route, but also needing to pump prime in other areas, and other entry routes, I suppose, into industry, whether that's through, boot camps, work ready programmes, careers transition from other sectors and backgrounds, so that, because I think probably just the young people coming through the education system, the volume's not going to be sufficient in itself, is it?
Certainly struggled, I think, to make the engineering world a really attractive place for people to go for, to kind of hook onto that vocational drive that people have. And I think this is a good chance for people to see that there's something they can get involved with that's got a long-term future, and that is helping us meet those net zero ambitions. There's a big whole career kind of opportunity here that's also doing good in terms of helping us reduce our emissions and help keep us as close as we can to the kind of warming pathways we're trying to hit to avoid kind of disastrous consequences of global warming.
No, exactly. As Cara said, I think key is to ensure that there is a more diverse workforce in engineering and construction. There is obviously a large percentage of the population, for whatever reason, isn't interested at the moment in entering these types of careers. So we definitely need to change that. And I think compared to many countries across the world, probably the number of women in engineering is actually quite low compared with most European and other sort of G7 countries. So again, if we are to meet the net zero targets and deliver the infrastructure projects required, then there definitely needs to be a more diverse workforce to make sure that we make the best use of across the board of who we have across the different aspects of the education system as well.
Excellent. I think probably those points that Cara, Deb, that you've just brought us round to in terms of that attractiveness piece and the diversity of the workforce and making engineering careers an attractive prospect, I think that probably rounds us off quite nicely in our discussion. We've set that overall scene of hydrogen economy and its huge expansion that's required to support industrial decarbonisation. where we're starting to see activity ramping up, what are the challenges, and then really drilling down into that skills piece. I think that draws us nicely to a conclusion. So do you have anything else that you would like to say or add before we finish up? Cara?
I see lots of opportunity and lots of kind of excitement to be had by getting involved. So I'd share the story with people that you think might be even slightly interested in getting involved in the industry, because I think there's lots more to come.
Fabulous. Thank you. And Deb?
Yeah, on the same theme as Cara's mentioned, really. It's as an engineer, it's really exciting place to be, really, energy, because it can go down so many different routes to meet net zero. Hydrogen's got a very important part to play in that, but there's so many different types of technology, so many different ways that hydrogen can be stored, can be distributed. There's different types of carriers of hydrogen, so it's a very exciting place and area to be involved in. And going forward, it requires a lot of innovation as well, which should hopefully help attract the younger generation into this field.
Wonderful. Well, goodness, thank you both so much. I really appreciate your time and sharing your knowledge and expertise. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This was Collaborate, a Net Zero podcast by the ECITB. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, and please visit our website at ecitb.org.uk. You can find out more information about our work to support industry in the transition to net zero by entering ECITB Skills for Net Zero into your search engine. See you again.